animal, talks like an animal, must be an animal. Come hear the animal, talking animal, talking animal.
Good morning. This is Talking Animals on WMNF. Duncan Strauss. My guest today is Jody Whitaker, veteran animal advocate and founder executive director of the Chicago Alliance for Animals, or CAA. CAA is a volunteer animal protection organization that reflects Whitaker's profound commitment and tireless efforts. CAA's highest profile victory was its campaign to ban horse-drawn carriages in Chicago, the third largest city in the U.S. In fact, this conversation recorded because fittingly a Chicago City Council meeting that Whitaker needed to attend directly conflicts with this Talking Animals broadcast, unfolded into a discussion that might be labeled Anatomy of a Victorious Major Animal Rights Campaign. In detailed fashion, she recounted key elements of the carriage ban campaign. From the initial phase she and a colleague completed, it was too soft and ramped it up, to the meticulous efforts to document the violations of the carriage operators, the challenges and delays involved with engaging the city council, and persuading them to ultimately vote for the ban. It's an illuminating and inspiring narrative, and we discuss some other topics too, and I'll play back that conversation in just a moment here on Talking Animals on WNF. Coming up later in today's program, I'll speak with Marion Parham, co-founder and president of Florida Voices for Animals, the longtime local animal rights organization, and organizer of the Tampa Bay Veg Fest, an acclaimed event typically held in early November. Sadly, the chief reason Marion was joining us today is to discuss the news that owing to the impact of the hurricane in all kinds of ways, this year's Veg Fest has been canceled. But we'll look to the future and other Florida Voices for Animals plans when I speak with Marion Parham later in today's show on Talking Animals on WMNF. Right now, though, let's hear my conversation with Jody Whitaker, again, founder and executive director of the Chicago Alliance for Animals, recorded Sunday. This is Jody Whitaker on Talking Animals on WMNF.
Let's welcome back to Talking Animals, Jody Whitaker. Thanks for joining us on the show again, Jody.
Thank you very much.
So I've had the pleasure of speaking with you on the show a couple of times over many years now, but the most recent of those was about 4 years ago, I guess. And I'm not inclined to assume that the folks listening right now recall or in some cases even heard that conversation. So I think it's okay. We'll review some fundamentals and then delve into some new topics and development. So let's get started by you telling me the story of the Chicago Alliance for Animals, or CAA, a little bit of like the history and mission.
Sure, definitely. So Chicago Alliance for Animals formed in 2015, in May of 2015. And it was a group of us here in Chicago, and we wanted it to, this organization to be kind of a space for any local organizations to work together on local campaigns. And it was my suggestion that our first campaign strategy be working on horse carriages, because I felt that it was kind of an easy target. Of course, there are big issues out there like big agriculture and animal research and animal experimentation. So we kind of decided to work on horse carriages and circuses, animal circuses. And so
the first issue was circuses. I'm sorry, not horse carriages, or
no horse care. It was kind of both horse carriages and animal circuses.
Okay, I got
you. So if any circuses were coming to town, we would work on that. And so we started protesting down at the horse carriage stand every month, and we started reaching out to local city council members and the mayor, and that's how it started. And then I can go into how it really, our campaign really went into what I consider overdrive, and that's when we knew what we were doing.
Yeah, well, I guess there's that kind of learning curve. The organization's kind of in its formative stages and focuses on a campaign. And this one was obviously complicated, and there's so much history and so other stuff I'm sure we get into about horse-drawn carriages, wherever they still continue to exist, and some of the resistance for people that, like yourself, say, hey, that's really not the best thing for the horses, et cetera. So yeah, you know, why don't you just describe that? Because that, I guess I didn't realize from our other conversations that that was the very first campaign. So that's quite a notable victory right out of the gate, as it were.
Right. And so, like I said, we formed in May of 2015, And we started doing monthly outreach where we'd stand down by the horse carriage stand, hand out flyers, talk to the public, hold signs, very peaceful protests. And in August of 2017, my colleague Barbara Whelan-Krantz and I were at the National Animal Rights Conference in Washington, D.C. And we were sitting at our booth and we were just, it was kind of slow. And we were talking about our campaign. And we both decided that what we were doing was just not enough. We really had to pick up our game. And what we decided right then and there, that when we got back to Chicago, we picked a date and we went down to the horse carriage stand and we documented the horses from early morning until late at night. And every city has laws on the books regarding the horse carriage trade. And Chicago had very clear laws. But what it comes down to, and this is pretty much true of every city, there are laws about how long the horses can work, how often they must be provided water, what temperature restrictions they can work at in the heat and the cold. And so we looked over Chicago's code and we basically learned it by heart, everything. And there were all sorts of laws regarding the fact that they could not work if it was 90 degrees or hotter. They couldn't work more than 6 hours in a 24-hour period. There were certain streets they couldn't go down. There's one street in Chicago that's kind of a party area downtown, and they weren't allowed to go on the street after, I believe, 6 p.m. on Friday night. And they did it every time. They would turn the corner on this street, and every time nobody was watching it, and we had to keep looking at the law, like, are we reading this correctly? Because yeah. they would leave the stand, take a right on Chicago Avenue and take a right on Rush Street. Rush Street is this little street that there's bars and, you know, yeah. a lot of nightlife.
Pretty and they famous would just take, for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Take a right on Rush Street. And every time they would take a right, we would just be standing there filming and saying, once again, they're going north on Rush Street, and that is against Chicago's laws. And after we would do these long, sometimes 12-hour days, we'd get down to the horse carriage stand around 9, 10 in the morning. And sometimes we'd be still there at midnight, 1 a.m. on Sunday morning.
Wow.
And the main thing we found out, and we made the mayor and the city council very aware of, is that they were only supposed to work 6 hours in a 24-hour period. They were working them from like 10 a.m. till midnight or till 1 in the morning.
Wow.
So more than double what the law allowed. And by documenting these violations and what it takes to prove to your city council that they're breaking the law is you actually have to be down there. We would get down there and we would, when one carriage would roll up, we would take a video of the horse, the driver, the number of the license plate. And we would say, you know, we'd narrate our video and say, here's Antique Coach and Carriage number 2 arriving at 10:07 a.m. on August 17th. And we'd take a short 30-second, 1-minute video. And every time that horse would leave for a ride and come back for a ride, drop off the passengers, we would take another quick video saying, here again is Antique Coach and Carriage number 2. They just gave a ride. And we would document that if they showed up at 10 a.m. and they were supposed to be off the street by 6. So I'm not doing the math in my head, but
yeah.
And we would say, you know, this horse should be going back to the stable right now. And they wouldn't. And then, you know, every hour we'd be like, this horse has now worked 1 hour longer than they are allowed to, 2 hours, 3 hours. And we would do that. We did this multiple times, and then we would send our footage to the city council members, and we would put out press releases. And when we got press on this in after our first time, and that really made a big difference.
And were you and I guess it was probably just you and Barbara initially who kind of hatched this idea when you were at the Animal Rights Conference. And by the way, did you guys say, hey, we got to step up our game, partly because you were influenced by some of the people that you had met and hung out with at that conference, or what just happened to be there coincidentally, or was that part of what figured into your decision to kick it up a notch or two?
I mean, obviously there are people at that conference who are doing amazing things and people I've looked up to and heroes, but with this specific campaign, we just decided like 1 hour a month of this, you know, peaceful protest or educational outreach is what we called it.
Yeah.
Was just not doing it. We knew that there were laws on the books. And really what it comes down to, and I say this because for anyone listening who wants to ban horse-drawn carriages in their city, or actually any issue, there's laws around surrounding that. But when it comes to animals, the laws on the books are rarely enforced. And it's up to animal advocates or compassionate people to make sure the laws are enforced. And so, for example, I'll give a perfect example. On the 4th of July one year, it was hovering between 90 and 93 degrees. And I had a friend in town. We were going to go out and have a drink and have some fun. And I told him, I said, I have to go to the horse carriage stand because I knew it was around, you know, it could be 90, 91, 92. Yeah. I have to get down there because I'm sure there are horses working. And so we went down there and sure enough, I videotaped two or three horses working in 90 plus degree heat. And I called the police. The police never did anything. And that can be a deterrent, but you've got to still do it. So to your question, we just decided we have to figure out ways to show that they're breaking the law. And that's how we did it. And we had other people help us with these day-long kind of like campouts, you know, stakeouts.
Right. Were you incredulous, at least early on, when you did spend those kind of full days there? How often there were one kind of violation or another of the rules as you, I mean, and obviously you didn't like the idea that the horse-drawn carriage to begin with, but it must have seemed initially like, I can't believe these guys are so flagrant in their disregard for, you know, how many hours the horses can be out there, how long totally they can be there, the heat temperature issue. I mean, it just seemed like there would be one thing after another as you guys were just out there logging everything.
It completely was. And when we started, the horse carriage operators would laugh at us. They would take video of us when we were videotaping violations. They would try to, I think, scare us or intimidate us by taking photos or videos of us. We had every right to be down there documenting violations of the law. What we were doing was not illegal, taking a video of them. And they would tell us things. And this is another thing that I say because I want others to be aware of it. If you witness a violation of the law, you have every right to take a video of it and document it and narrate your video. They can take a video of you. I mean, I don't really know all the laws, but they want to intimidate you not to do that. And then other things they would do, and for example, they couldn't be on Chicago streets between 4 and 6 p.m. and between, I believe, 7 and 9 a.m. Monday through Friday, because those were rush hours. Okay. So they would leave the stable, which was about a half hour trot for the horse to get to the horse carriage stand where they would stand and pick up their rides and drop off their ride. And they would leave their stables approximately around 5:30 p.m. to make their way to the stand at 6. The way the law was written was they cannot be on the street between 4 and 6 p.m. So I would go to the spot by a bank right down the street from the stable, and I would see them coming out around 5:30, around 5:40, and I'd get out my handy little camera, my phone, and take a video and again say, here's Chicago horse and carriage number 4. They're on the street at 5:45 p.m. They are breaking Chicago's law. And they would say to me, we can be on the street now. We just can't be down at the horse carriage stand until 6. No. Yeah. So they lie to our face. They try to tell us, you know, how the law works. And what it comes down to is it's up to you as an advocate to read the law and to, you know, if you're confused by it, reach out to the agency of that city and say, am I reading this correctly? Can they not be on any street in Chicago from 4 to 6? Exactly. But they were telling us how it worked. Yeah. And what it came down to is they knew nobody ever monitored the trade and they were never fined or cited until we started doing it. And then guess what? They started getting cited and fined for these violations. And so when we would come around, they started changing their ways. They stopped coming out of the stable until 6. And that was all due to the work of the Chicago Alliance for Animals. And because of us documenting these violations, as well as our educational outreach, as well as reaching out to our officials daily through our daily action alerts, and then testifying before the city council, those were like the main strategies that helped us past this in 2.5 years.
So impressive. And the thing that's great about it is really, again, that it was your first issue and you kind of, as many people have to do initially, you sort of just kind of find your way, but there's no path, there's no prescribed thing what to do. You just have to sort of say, all right, if we get there at this time, we document this, we make a video, and then it just started to work.
Yeah. And it's, you know, it's What is going on with now with my Lincolnwood campaign is I remember in late of 2019, I felt very defeated by the horse carriage campaign. After we got the media exposure in August or September, and then again in December, we weren't getting meetings with the city council members or the mayor. And this is an interesting story is we went out and documented the Saturday after Thanksgiving, you know, and in the area where the horses worked, where it was a very like a shopping district on Michigan Avenue. And so I was out there all day on that Saturday documenting horses being overworked. I'd been trying to get a meeting with one of the city council members whose district is where the horses work. And he would not return my calls, wouldn't meet with me. And the following Monday, I was at my job that I got paid at. And I got a call from his office. And the woman said, you know, there's no need to meet with him because he's not interested in introducing legislation to ban the horse carriages. And so I listened to her. And then I said, okay, please tell him that this last Saturday, I documented every single horse being overworked. Horses not provided water, going down streets they weren't allowed. And it was like empty air on the other side, end of the phone. And I said, so please pass this along to him and ask him to return my call. And I said, I'm putting out press releases in the morning about all of these violations. Well, we got a lot of media and I never got that call from him, but within like a couple days, I got woke up from a friend saying, can you believe it? And the Chicago Sun-Times ran an article about this specific city council member, Riley, introducing a ban. His aide told me he wouldn't. So it was
never got back in touch with you at any point, not only to meet, but even to say, hey, just so you know, here's what I'm about to do. I mean, that's
he just introduced it.
And you had no role in it, I guess. Was that part of the idea?
We had a very big role in it.
In real life, you did, but I wonder if he was thinking, like, if he can just slide this by and sort of take credit for.
You know, I didn't mind that he didn't call me back. He obviously did what we wanted by introducing that legislation. And if he could do it without, he didn't need to. And the way I look at it is, he saw the media. He saw the footage of these horses being overworked. And so at that point, he said, okay, enough. I'm going to introduce this legislation. Because you fast forward to March 11th, 2020, which is the day that we got the bill finally out of the committee. He was there and he adamantly defended me and my organization and my volunteers. And he said, you know, I had no interest in doing this. But basically, this organization proved that you do not self-regulate. He's talking to the horse carriage operators.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You don't self-regulate. The city doesn't have time to put babysitters on the street, you know, from 9, 10 a.m. on a Saturday or Sunday until midnight that night. Sure. So he said, if you can't self-regulate, then you're going to, then the industry has got to go away. And that's literally, and that meeting was very powerful because after he introduced the legislation in December of 2018, we got it on the agenda the following September, and we had enough votes to pass. And the chair of that committee stood up and blocked the vote. She blocked the democratic process.
Mm.
And because of that, we had to wait until March of 2020 because they wouldn't put it back on the agenda. And we were testifying at every city council member, or I'm sorry, at every meeting, asking them to put it on the agenda. And it was getting held back from this chair of the committee where it was sitting, the license committee. And we also believe the mayor was not allowing it to go forward. So it was very crooked. It was typical Chicago politics. But I'm very proud of the fact that, you know, between us continually documenting violations, continually reaching out to this different city council members every day, and then testifying before city council, we made it clear to them, we're not going away. We're going to keep proving how this trade does not follow the law, and how the city refuses to enforce the law. And then they finally allowed it to go forward.
Wow. Well, it's a testimony to persistence and documenting things. And people like yourself, and fortunately, I guess others, were willing to put in long, long days to capture exactly what the circumstances were and how flagrant those violations were, so that the city council person who initially didn't have to give you the time of day, literally, suddenly was outraged. And but it just goes to show you there are certain things that you really need on a campaign, especially in a big city like Chicago, to make the headway, to make the impact.
Yeah, and I'll tell people, there were days, I mean, I didn't enjoy going down to a horse carriage stand at 9 a.m. on a Saturday. And I remember taking one video of just the noise. I love the city of Chicago, but I'm not a shopper. I don't like really the Michigan Avenue scene. You know, it's very crazy. There's buses, garbage trucks, speeding motorcycles, taxi cabs, you know, a lot of pedestrians. It's a very touristy area. And I remember once just taking a video thinking, this is what these horses have to deal with all day long, every weekend. This noise, this constant chaos.
Yeah.
And these are farm animals that are used to being in a pasture, in a quiet area. And they have to listen to all this and be around it with blinders on. So, and we've got tons of videos of horses behind city buses, you know, breathing exhaust, or right next to a garbage truck with their air horn that's so loud. And it's, I mean, for me, I was uncomfortable down there. I was getting stressed out, and I can't imagine what these horses have to deal with. So if you're in a city that still has horse carriages, I'm happy to help you and guide you and give advice, but only if you're committed to doing it. It takes commitment, and it doesn't mean you have to do it every single day or take tons of time out of your day, but you have to commit to a campaign and work on it. And you can do it.
Yeah.
We could do it in the third largest city that has a very well-known kind of corrupt reputation, then anybody can do it.
Yeah, no, it's really a textbook example of exactly those things, but how, like you say, the commitment has to be there. People don't have to be there all day, every day, but you have to put in some time to document the things that are going to get the attention of people that are possibly going to shut it down eventually or get outraged themselves and get legislation going. So let me just quickly say, this is Talking Animals on WMNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. My guest is Jody Whitaker, founder and executive director of the Chicago Alliance for Animals, or CAA. And we're just hearing about their initial huge victory shutting down the horse-drawn carriages in Chicago. And this interview was recorded Sunday. So that's great that you're kind of offering that. I was curious to see if, in the wake of that victory, have you heard from people from different cities or countries even that have horse-drawn carriages saying, hey, how did you do it? Is there a blueprint for your campaign, or can you help us?
Yeah, definitely. I say that 2017 is the year where a lot of things clicked for me. That's when we decided to start going down to the horse carriage stand and picking up our game and looking at other strategies like testifying before city council, coming up with business endorsement pledges, all sorts. You know, it takes, one thing might not work for other cities. So what I believe is, you know, throw everything at the wall, try everything, because you never know what's going to reach a specific elected official or a mayor of that city. So it was in, I believe, October of 2017 when I formed the partnership to ban horse carriages worldwide. And that I scoured social media for anybody in any other city working on similar bans. And I found a lot of people, and I reached out to people in Philadelphia, New York City, Houston, Dallas. And so I started, we had a secret, if you will, Facebook thread, Facebook page for people in other cities. And once we banned our horse carriages, I made that public because I thought, you know, I need as many people to join and help with these campaigns. There's no point in keeping it like just amongst the organizers. And so I did end up forming banned horse carriages chapters all over the world. We have very active campaigns right now in Dallas, in Charleston, in Savannah. I have chapters in Boston, New York City, Krakow, Poland, Indianapolis, New Orleans. I keep thinking of many cities. Unfortunately, I've guided people, and then they kind of fall by the wayside and they just stop working. And it's very frustrating because, you know, I tell people, like, you don't have to put in, you know, 3 hours a day or anything. I recommend people put in 1 hour a week, and that's doable. I mean, there's 24 hours in a day, but don't give up, because if you give up, you definitely won't win. You won't get there. But if you continually put in a little time and work toward your goal, you'll get there. I mean, again, I didn't enjoy those long days, but I did it because I did it for the horses. And I also, you know, like I said, on the 4th of July, Did I really want to go down the horse carriage stand and see horses standing in direct sunlight with no water? No, because it's hard on me. It's hard emotionally, but yeah. I had to do it because I knew they were there. And I did it. And I didn't spend all day there. I went down, I made my videos. I called the police. I had a record that I called the police to make sure the city knows, okay, on this day, on the 4th of July, the horses were being worked in too hot a weather. And things like that, you got to do. And if you care, I think you'll stick with it. So I encourage everybody to stick with these campaigns. And I'm always here for anybody who's willing to, you know, work with me on it. And I think I have a lot of the strategies that work.
Well, apparently so. Yeah, for sure. So quick question about something you mentioned, a number of cities, and I guess one that sort of famously has been at the kind of high profile part of this is New York City. How do you feel that's going for any kind of advancement along the lines of what you guys have eventually got done in Chicago? Is that just too ingrained in some various cultural and other elements there in that city? Or do you think there's still a chance of a ban there?
New York definitely has a chance. And I'm very frustrated that they haven't done it yet. Yeah. Obviously, New York is a bit bigger trade than Chicago was or than most cities. But yeah. I don't know. I know that they've gotten a lot of celebrities to speak for them. But I don't know if they're doing like the documenting of, you know, like going out at 9, 10 in the morning and doing what we did. I know people working on that campaign. I've urged them to do this. I don't know. They may be, they may not be, but I've never seen it. And yeah. You've got to prove, I can't stress this enough, is you've got to prove that they're being overworked. I know New York has a law. I don't know off the top of my head because I haven't worked on New York in a while, but I think it's might be 9 hours that they can work the horses. Like Chicago's was 6, so it's different. But I bet you they're working those horses more than 9 hours. And with the deaths, with the collapses in New York, I don't know why it's not being done. I understand that they've got union behind the horse carriage operators have unions, and that's a big uphill struggle. But when you've got video of horses being whipped on the street and trying to get the horse up, I can't think of the horse's name off the top of my head, but that in itself should have been enough to ban them right outright. So yeah. I don't honestly know what's going on and why it's taking so long in New York. It's very frustrating to me. But I'll help in any way I can. If I see the group putting out actions, I will do those actions. I'll call the mayor, forgetting his name too, but he's an embattled mayor now, but yeah. I'll do any of those actions, but it's really up to the locals to keep working on it. And, you know, celebrity endorsements are important, but that's not as important as having people contact the city council and the mayor every day and testifying before them and documenting violations.
Right. And sometimes, of course, you have celebrity endorsements going the other direction. Like I remember Liam Neeson, for example, and some others. And there was a key editor at the New York Times a bunch of years ago wrote like a whole thing about this. So you're up against a lot of different factors. But like you say, strip all that away. If you can document what the treatment of the horses is or the mistreatment of the horses, that's how you get people's attention. And that's how you can make some progress, it sounds like.
Right. And I think, you know, getting down there and taking a 30-second video, you know, here and there is great. But it's not as good as being down there the entire day. Because that's how you show, you know, like I said, we would take a video at 10 a.m. And when that horse would come back from a ride, we'd take another video. So it's showing the public, this horse is still here, you know, and every hour, every half hour, you take another quick video of that horse to kind of show how long these horses' days are, as opposed to just one video of a horse in the street. So again, I'm not following that campaign because I'm here in Chicago, but I will help in any way I can, and I hope they get their ban soon. I mean, it should have been done years ago.
Yeah.
I hope they get their ban soon because those horses need sanctuary and they need to get out of that environment.
Yeah. Well, one other thing along these lines, then we'll get into some other topics altogether, but maybe you could talk for a moment about electric carriages and what they might have done to transform the issue. I remember reading a New York Times piece maybe a couple months ago, about a longtime horse-drawn carriage operator in Brussels who had decided to sell his 5 horses, and he put the money that he generated from that, I guess, towards buying 2 electric carriages. And they documented in this story, at least, that a couple months in, business was booming. People loved the carriage without the horse and loved the experience. And he planned to buy a third electric carriage. So it seems like there's something there, lessons to be learned the other way about. People aren't clinging to the horse part of it necessarily if you have something still looks cool and interesting as the carriage itself, but it's electric powered instead of horse powered.
You know, I personally don't think they're necessary. If a company that used to use horses wants to transition, I applaud it in every way, shape or form. Yeah. Some cities, like in Chicago, it really didn't come up because we weren't pushing for electric carriages because sure. We have enough traffic in the city of Chicago.
Right.
That,
yeah.
You know, and but if it takes that to get a ban, I'm all for it. You know, in Philly, I worked with my partners, Stephanie Kirsten and Tiffany Stair, and who now are working hard on Revolution Philadelphia, and they're doing great work. But I had helped guide them on a campaign in Philly, and they got the horses off the street. So I'm thrilled about it. I hope they get an actual ban soon. What the holdup is their city council member is saying he won't allow a ban until they get electric carriages, which is kind of silly because there's no horses on the street right now. Nobody's like, you know, clamoring for horse-drawn carriages.
Yeah.
And so, you know, if they have to get electric carriages in order to get that official ban, because my concern is that if New York does ever get their horse carriage ban, that some of the operators and owners might transition to, say, Philly or Boston. Boston hardly has a horse carriage present, but the streets in I lived in Boston for 3 years. The streets in Boston are, you know, those are old streets, cobblestone. Some areas are cobblestone. The last thing they want or need are horses having to navigate that kind of, you know, those kind of streets.
Yeah.
And so I want these cities, even if they don't have a horse carriage presence now, to continue to work on getting the legislation passed, because, you know, we don't want New York to start going to some of these other cities.
Yeah.
So again, if they need the electric carriage in order to get the ban, then like I said, I'm all for it. But I don't think that should be advocates' main push. I think right. The main push should be that, you know, horses are not vehicles. They shouldn't be exploited like they are in this trade. And then, of course, the fact that every horse carriage operator breaks the law. I'm sure of it.
Right. Yeah. Well, you have some pretty direct experience with that realm. So, yeah, but that's interesting how the electric carriages, in a way, have actually become kind of a complicating factor, where some of the things that you heard and read, you know, suggest like it's a solution, but it sounds like it's a mixed bag in terms of moving forward with this, at least in certain cities or countries.
I believe they're expensive. I mean, again, if they help the horse carriage owner or operator say, yes, I'd rather, you know, transition to this e-carriage, then I'm all for it. But if they can't, or a lot of times the horse carriage proponents will say nobody wants an e-carriage. The whole point is having that horse there and feeling in touch with this animal. Well, you know, being in touch with that animal who's wearing blinders and who's got a painful bit in their mouth, that's not like spending time with a horse in nature where they can be themselves.
Yeah.
So e-carriages for me are, you know, I don't know, I've got mixed emotions about it,
sure.
but basically what it comes down to is if it helps a city get a ban, or then I say go for it.
Okay, I got you.
If you don't need them, you know, like in Chicago, it never really even came up, you know, and I think that it did come up on March 11th at that final meeting when we got it passed out of the license committee. And yeah. I believe the two aldermen in the area where the horses work, the two that introduced the legislation, they said something to the effect of, we don't need more, you know, vehicles on the street, especially slow moving vehicles, which is another complaint in a big city, is you've got people trying to get to work. You've got buses trying to drop people off, and they have to slow down behind a horse carriage.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess we'll kind of keep an eye on what's happening in New York and elsewhere, but it sounds like you're a great resource for people who are serious about those efforts. So that's good to know. Again, this
Definitely.
Is talking. I was just going to say, this is Talking Animals on WNF. I'm Duncan Strauss. I'm speaking with Jody Whitaker, founder and executive director of the Chicago Alliance for Animals, in an interview that was recorded Sunday. So I don't want to run out of time to hit some other stuff here, Jody. So let's talk a little bit about other kind of main campaigns for CAA right now, what you're focused on, and what we should know about that.
Yeah, definitely. Our main campaigns right now are to free Spur, a tortoise, from a 3x5 prison that she's been in for more than 30 years. She was trafficked from her home and family in Africa and has been in this pet store called the Animal Store in Lincolnwood, Illinois, which is on the north side of Chicago, northwest side. And we alerted the village officials to this issue, and they actually have a law on their books that prohibit the keeping of wild animals. And so we've been urging them to enforce this law. And back in March of 2022, they voted to waive their own law. And by doing so, it's keeping this amazing animal stuck in a you know, 3x5 display case where she cannot roam. She cannot, she can't do anything natural. She doesn't get to feel sunshine on her shell or a breeze or live outside or have companionship with others of her kind. And it's a sad situation. We have a sanctuary for her in Arizona called Desert Oasis Turtle and Tortoise Sanctuary, where she would be able to live as natural a life as possible. She'd be able to burrow and roam. They're slow animals, but they like to roam, and she can.
Wow. So what prospects do you think at this point of that being rectified?
Well, I think we're going to win. It's just taking time, and it's taking too long, in my opinion. This village trustees, the board, is very corrupt, in my opinion. The mayor does not want to hear from us. We've been testifying at almost every single meeting, and we keep going, and we won't stop until Spur is at Dots in Arizona and they stop selling rabbits. There's a Cook County law that prohibits the sale of rabbits from pet stores. Lincolnwood is part of Cook County. They have opted out of this law since it passed back in March of 2016, I believe. So for more than 8 years, the village has opted out of this rabbit law, and all the local rabbit shelters and rescues are inundated with rabbits. Mm. And this store sells baby rabbits that are not neutered, they're not altered, and they're not vaccinated. Okay. So people go and buy rabbits at Easter or whenever, and then they realize that rabbits are not the easiest pet. They like to chew on electrical cords. They're considered exotic. You can only take them to an exotic vet. And then they get sick of them, or they think, oh, this animal's more expensive than I planned. And so they either dump them on these animal rescues and shelters that never have enough homes, never have enough fosters, never have enough cages, or they put them outside. They just drop them in a forest preserve or a parking lot, thinking that this domestic animal knows how to survive on their own, and they don't. So the village of Lincolnwood is incredibly irresponsible. And we tell them all the stories, the horror stories of these rabbits and what Spur deals with, and they are unmoved. Mm. So we keep pushing.
Yeah. Wow. That's sometimes if it's just a single animal like that, it seems like it should be more poignant and powerful rather than like just like some sort of unidentified group or combination animals or breeds or whatever. But sometimes it just seems more heartbreaking when it's just this one tortoise who's just looking to live like they should, like a natural life.
This is a wild animal who has nothing natural to her world. When we first started documenting Spur's situation back in October, November 2021, she would climb up on the side of her enclosure, and it's like tiled. It's almost like bath tile. And she has these big claws, and she would try to climb up and she would fall, and she would hit her face or her chin on the side of this cage. And then if I walked to the other side, she would walk over and try to get out. For the last year, we don't even see her move. She is lethargic. Right. She doesn't. The owner told one of my volunteers that she has a respiratory infection. Mm. And so she said, well, could that be because she never gets sunshine, that she never gets to feel a breeze, that she doesn't have companionship?
Yeah.
Of course, he got angry with her and hung up on her. The owner of the store is a real character.
I'm sure. Yeah. Character is probably very diplomatic. Yeah. Jody, sort of nearing the end of our time here. Unfortunately, I have a bunch more things I want to talk to you about, but it just sounds like some of these things are just take so much time. Well, how many hours in a given week would you say you devote to your various enterprises? And there's not just CAA, but there's other things. It just seems like you've got your hands in so many things, but some of those aren't an actual job, as you alluded to earlier. So what are we looking at for an average number of hours per week for this kind of work?
Well, I do it full time now. So I would say anywhere between maybe 50 and 60 hours I put in.
Yeah.
There are times where, you know, I'm sitting at my desk all day working on animal issues. And if I'm not, you know, at work, home working on it, I'm at a meeting to testify downtown. We're also trying to ban the sale of new fur in Chicago. There's an ordinance that we're trying to pass. We're also trying to free Rocky the coyote, who's been stuck in a cage for more than 6 years, who is a pack animal who has no companionship. And then I find myself at night sitting on the couch, and I might be watching TV and I'm on my phone and I'm, you know, making calls for my partner in Dallas, Gloria Raquel Carbajal, Sherry Burlingame Cressman in Charleston, who's trying to ban horse carriages there. They're doing great work. So I'm helping them, and I'll make the calls and send the emails or to reach out to their city council members. So it's, you know, I put a lot of time in, but that doesn't mean I don't have time for fun too, because that's important.
Yeah, that's really good. Because I was going to say, as a longtime activist doing this for a number of years, just seems like a concern for those people like yourself who really work hard and have been doing it for a long time and are super committed. There's always a concern about burnout and about getting discouraged or worse. But you sound like you're aware of that and sort of taking steps to make sure that you have some kind of balance, some kind of fun in your life, so you don't fall prey to some of those things.
Right. I mean, the last thing, and there are times that I can get very down, depressed and discouraged, especially with this Lincolnwood campaign and Rocky. These two campaigns are taking way too long. These are two animals we have sanctuary for. And these elected officials just seem to have no heart. So it can be very hard. But I have to just remember that legislation of any type is not quick. And when it comes to animals, it's even slower. It's, you know, and so I feel very lucky that we banned the horse carriages in 2.5 years. This spur campaign is taking longer than that, and it shouldn't.
Isn't that remarkable? It's so counterintuitive, right?
Yeah. I mean, if they just enforce, they have a law on the books. They have two laws. If they simply enforced them, it would allow this animal to get to sanctuary. It would stop a little bit of the rabbits being dumped outside and being abandoned to fend for themselves. But they're like, we can choose to enforce this law or not. Obviously, these laws were proposed and passed for a reason, for good reason. So, yeah, it's, but you know, when I get down like that, I try to think of new campaign strategies and always reaching out to the media. You know, I'm hoping to get some media on both campaigns. We got media on Rocky last week after I testified before the Cook County Commissioner. So that was really good.
Great. Well, Jesus, if you don't have enough going on. So in your vast amount of free time now, you're also hosting a weekly radio show called If Cage Walls Could Talk. So tell me, we just have about a minute or so left, I guess, at this point, I'm sorry to say, but tell me a little bit about it, how did it come about, and does it aim to fill a certain niche in particular?
Well, it's called If Cage Walls Could Talk, and it's just all about any animal issue that I can find. You know, I really like talking to people who are in grassroots doing the work that, you know, we do, and really showing that they're trying to make a difference for animals. So it's every Saturday from 5 to 6 Central Time. And I think it's a great show talking about all sorts of animal rights issues and how to liberate animals from suffering and pain.
And how do you like doing it? It sounds like you're really enjoying it.
I like it. Yeah. I mean, it's work because you're going to find guests. You understand this.
I was going to say, my hat's totally off you because I put like a crazy number of hours into this show, both before and after the broadcast, as I'm sure you've become all too familiar. But I'm not doing the 1,000 other things that you're doing. So, I mean, you must be a master of time management is all I can say. Take this on top of everything else you're doing. So,
yeah, I don't know about that, but it's trying is a balance, I guess, a balancing act.
Yeah, well, good for you, and it sounds like it's going well, and sounds like you've had some really good guests, and more to come, I'm sure.
Yeah, and I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today.
Oh, yeah, well, no, it's great, and so we've been speaking with Jody Whitaker, and again, it's Chicago Alliance for Animals and other organizations that she founded and is involved with that we didn't even have a chance to talk about, including Center for Ethical Sciences and some of the things that we've talked about in the past, and there's all kinds of stuff on, and you can just search for Chicago Alliance for Animals, and there's social media pages and websites and all kinds of stuff to get more information that we just didn't get a chance to cover today. So Jody, thank you so much for joining us again on Talking Animals, and thank you for all your great work on behalf of all our animal friends.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate your time and interest.
For sure.
My thanks again to Jody Whitaker for joining us today on Talking Animals. And in a rare move, we're going to skip the Comedy Corner for today so we can get right into our conversation with Miriam Parham, who's the co-founder and president Florida Voices for Animals, and among other things, they are the organizers of the Tampa Bay Veg Fest, which, as I mentioned earlier in the show, unfortunately, hurricane impact of one kind or another has required them to cancel this year. So we're going to discuss that more with Miriam Parham, and we're going to bring her on the phone right now to do just that. Miriam?
Hi, Duncan. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thanks for joining us on Talking Animals again, although I'm sorry what the circumstances are in this case. So we've been sort of talking a little bit on the show once or twice so far that the Tampa Bay Veg Fest did have to be canceled owing to various aspects of the storm. Kind of give me, if you will, kind of a little more detail about the circumstances that led to what I'm sure was an agonizing decision to cancel the festival.
Sure. I also want to thank Talking Animals and WMNF for your unwavering support through the years. There's so much to share. I'll probably speak fast. We won't have time to cover everything, but this is a heartbreaking decision not to have our 13th annual Tampa Bay Veg Fest, which would have been scheduled, as you said, this Saturday. But the impact of the two hurricanes was tremendous to our community, to all areas, many vendors, many volunteers, our staff, and we hurt for the community. We're hurting like so many in the community. And pretty much all our board members, and if I skip anybody, all of this stuff is on our websites, but our, you know, board and our advisory board. And again, after speaking to many of them who sustained damage from one or both of the hurricanes due to their houses, their cars, both, you know, a lot of tree damage and just a lot of flooding, storm surges, this affected directly many of our board members who are living in the area, the Tampa Bay area, as far down as Sarasota, where Helene first hit. And in the coast, and, you know, one of our board members is close to losing her home, and several volunteers lost cars. So same thing we've heard and seen from the community. So this is a labor of love, and so many volunteers and sponsors, and our sponsors have been tremendous. Most of them have said we'll keep the money till next year for all the sponsorship and everything that, you know, many of the sponsors give us in return for doing this event. This is an award-winning event. We were selected by the community for the past 2 years in a row for the Tampa Bay Times Best of the Best, one of the best festivals in the area. So we know this is something that means a lot to people, but it is a passion for us because it is an opportunity to support our community, many local restaurants, local businesses, professionals. We had several local health professional speaking this year, and one of our board members, advisory board, Melissa Cepeda, who was on your show talking about Say No to Two.
Yeah.
That's still something that's fresh because she would have explained even more to anybody who had questions before the vote because it's a misleading amendment. So just quickly, she was going to talk about saying no to two to that. And again, had a beautiful speaker lineup, musicians, local musicians, and chefs, oh my gosh, chefs from the community trying to support our wonderful, wonderful vegan restaurants like La Settima Club. Had their Dave, their chef, was going to make something for us that was yummy, and another restaurant who closed and reopened, Nana's Rooted. You know, we do this because we want our community to have plant-based options and not just the health but the benefit to animals and the environment. But in the past 2 years, Duncan, 9, and actually recently a 10th vegan restaurant closed. This is heartbreaking. So we want to support these wonderful vendors and restaurants who worked so hard, got through the pandemic, and some didn't make it. like many other, you know, businesses too. So this is usually a celebration of happiness and just, you know, so much, you know, music. A kids area, our organizer for the kids area, her house was flooded. Food samples, our coordinator was adversely affected, and the speaker's organizer, you know.
Yeah.
Name after name and story after story.
Yeah, it just sounds like it just was left and right. You guys were just hit in all kinds of ways, and there just wasn't a way to carry on. And we should mention, when you mentioned earlier about the local recognition, that some years ago, Tampa Bay Veg Fest was kind of acclaimed nationally as one of the top veg fests in the country.
Yes, One Green Planet said we were one of the top 10 to attend.
Yeah.
Even the Tampa Downtown Partnership has recognized this as a family-friendly restaurant event and in the community. And so we really, really appreciate all that. And we just put our best, and so many volunteers. So people say, well, why don't you move forward and have it? You know, when about half of our key, or if not all of them, had some impact, it's pretty hard to just,
yeah.
You can't do that. You can't check in vendors and know who's supposed to do what, and you can't just organize and set up an event with people that, you know, are not involved throughout the year working really hard to coordinate these areas. It's just...
For sure.
It's just a lot to it.
Did you give any thought, even in passing, to, like, having a scaled back version of Veg Fest or a different event that still retains some elements of it?
Well, the cost for the park and the city, and everybody was very, very gracious, but the cost without... I just don't even know how you would scale it down.
Yeah.
You know, have who can come and who can't come. It was very, very time consuming just even
sort through
people know, informing them of this. And I still have a couple phone calls to make for people just to make sure they don't show up just as a volunteer. Not volunteer, but even as an attendee, my friends and family, like a lot of people. So, but one group, and we thank our friends and supporters from Vegan International. They do the vegan halal cart, and we're going to be one of our vendors. They have a small little event that we put up and posted also on our social media at We Vegan Cafe in Hatton that they're going to do on Saturday from 11 to 5. Of course, they don't have, you know, all the vendors and the space and everything, so they probably couldn't accommodate the thousands of people that would come to our...
Right, but if people are looking for something... You know, in lieu of the actual Real McCoy happening this year, which it just can't for reasons you've explained, this would be an alternative.
It could be. And I also want to mention, because you wanted me to mention going forward some things that we're doing.
We have probably another minute and a half, so I just want to make sure you hit whatever you...
Quickly, we have a karaoke potluck Friday night that we have every first Saturday at the Unitarian Universalist Church, where we do our Thanks Vegan, which will also take place later on this month. And that's a potluck, and the details will be posted shortly on the website. The karaoke is already posted. We do quarterly park cleanups, and volunteer work days at rescues. We had to cancel one at Laughing Pig Sanctuary because of the damage from the storm and concern of safety for our volunteers. And we will do our 30th annual Have a Heart for the Animals. It's also a yearly event in February. So we recognize all the volunteers and workers, but I just want to make sure that I don't remiss in saying, please, please, please support these vendors. If you go to our website for TampaBayVegFest.com, all our vendors were listed. We are leaving that deliberately, and we're going to maybe add more information and make sure there's links to their websites, because just like those 10 restaurants that have closed in the past couple of years, we want to support our vendors. We want to make sure that you know they're out there, and everybody needs to be supported. So please, 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 do takeout, do whatever you
can
to support our
Thank you. Thank you so much, Mary. Unfortunately, we are out of time, but I'm so sorry. But we covered quite a bit of ground, so I appreciate it. And I'm so sorry, and we'll see you next year at VegFest.
Thank you so much, Duncan.
This is Talking Animals on WMNF, and stay tuned for the conversation with Mario Nunez and Joe King Carter. Next week, we have Peter Singer.